Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Supreme Court when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and they're banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and our moral outlook over the past 50 years or so. Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion now arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 749 statutes, judgments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, or Natural Law, it's automatic, like karma. It's just like AIDS, herpes, and VD. It's the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we've been talking about the Constitution. The Supreme Court interprets that Constitution. They've had that power since 1801. The Supreme Court tells the other two branches of government what is and what is not constitutional. Thomas Jefferson didn't think that was good. I reported on that. And the system that we have used from 1801 is the Marshall system, in which the court construes for everybody what the Constitution means and what its intent was. Whether that's good or bad, I said I'd leave that for you to decide. As a reporter, I wanted to report it to you. Now, here's the final editorial in the booklet, and it's called The Supreme Court, put out by Foundations of Liberty. I want to give you the name and number so you can get a copy of it if you so desire. It's called the MacArthur Institute at 946th Avenue in East Moline, spelled M-O-L-I-N-E, Illinois, I-L-L, 61244. If you're outside the United States, why don't you send a little something so that they can send that to you in international mail. Here in the United States, they offer to send you a free sample copy. I'm just suggesting for you people outside the United States, around the world, if you'd put a little something in there, help them with their costs. They recommend a subscription at $25 a year. And evidently, that's about what it costs to put it out. It's bimonthly. Give them a shot. And they put out a number of books. I reported on the free enterprise system that came from Foundations of Liberty here in the recent past. And this booklet here, W. Cleon Skousen, who wrote several books on constitutional law, American government. And remember, for the rest of you people in Anglo-Saxon countries like Australia, Canada, New Zealand, you know, the Anglo-Saxon administration, the common law of England is the law of your country. It's been that way, you know, since you were founded, and will continue to be so until the second coming. Now, it has been perverted, and the editor here, his name is James R. Patrick, wrote a note here from the editor, and I thought it was pretty much on point and summarizes or sums up the story here on the Supreme Court that we've been reporting on. He says the Supreme Court, that body of men to whom one can make his final appeal, has come under tremendous criticism this last 40 or 50 years. Regardless of the final decision of any given case, it's obvious that not everyone can be satisfied. The very fact that a case has risen to this level is evidence that there are strong differences of opinion. Therefore, whatever the decision, to some it will be reviewed or viewed as a violation of their rights, liberties, and property. They, the lonely nine, know that whatever their decision, someone is going to be angered, and it can be a lonely, thankless position. Their unique position of being the final authority of the land places them under the grave responsibility of interpreting the case in light of the Constitution, so as to be not only fair, but also, more importantly, to be in agreement with the original intentions of the law. And it is this responsibility to interpret the law, not to make law, but to interpret the Constitution, that has divided the people in their respect or opinion of this high judiciary body. Ironically, this division is also seen on the very bench of the Supreme Court. They, the justices, are not in total agreement as to the extent of power or authority that is at their command. Former Chief Justice Stone, in commenting upon the obligation of the Supreme Court justices to guard against usurpation of power, said this. Now, this is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, a former Chief Justice. And his observation was that while the unconstitutional exercise of power by the executive branch of government is subject to judicial restraint, the only check or balance upon our own exercise of power is our own sense of self-restraint. Self-restraint, that requires morality. So where does morality come from? Morality. It comes from the Ten Commandments. It comes from that sense of limited government espoused by God Himself in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandment model is the model for limited government and self-restraint. A law that says, thou shalt not steal, or honor your father and mother, or thou shalt not commit adultery. These are restraints upon your excessive behavior. If you learn these, one of our founding fathers, I think it was Patrick Henry, made the observation that he who is governed best is governed least. Or he who is governed least is governed best. John Adams is the fellow that made the observation, second president of the United States, that the Constitution of the United States is made for a moral people and it will not suffice for any other. So, without morality, the Constitution of the United States cannot function. And it is not functioning, and the people of America are not moral. And our institutions have become amoral, and that's the good side of it. They're probably more immoral than amoral. And without morality, our Constitution can't function. And without self-restraint, it's a dead-letter issue. Now, Chief Justice Stone recognized the danger and the temptation of unbridled authority. Later, Chief Justice Charles Evans Hughes flatly declared that the Constitution is what the judges say it is. So to him, the final authority of the land lay in the hands of men who seemingly could act without restraint. Former Senator Samuel J. Irvin, Jr., in an effort to give a fair appraisal of the Supreme Court's responsibility, chose to go back to the early years of our nation and to the words of our most revered Chief Justice, John Marshall. His findings were as follows. No question is more critical to America than this. What obligation does the Constitution impose upon the Supreme Court justices? America's greatest jurist of all times, Chief Justice John Marshall, answered this question with candor and clarity in his opinion in Marbury v. Madison, and also in Gibbons v. Ogden. And in these indisputably sound opinions, Chief Justice Marshall said, first, that the principles of the Constitution are designed to be permanent. Second, that the words of the Constitution must be understood to mean what they say. And third, that the Constitution continues and constitutes an absolute rule for the government of the Supreme Court justices in their official action. And in elaborating the second declaration, Marshall added, as men whose intentions require no concealment generally employ the words which most directly and aptly express the ideas that they intend to convey. The Enlightenment patriots who framed our Constitution and the people who adopted it must be understood to have employed words in their natural sense and to have intended what they have said. Now, unfortunately, many today do not agree with Samuel Irvin's or Sam Irvin's findings or with John Marshall's respect for the Constitution as the highest law of the land. Nor do they agree that they should be bound to the law as passed by Congress, which must stand in agreement with the original intent of this magnificent document. They see a shortcut. They see a way to circumvent the law by rewriting the laws through the judicial system. They would use this power of the court to impose their will upon the masses. They view themselves as able and responsible leaders, looking out for the best interests of society. In reality, however, their actions contain the germs of a tyrannical state. And Daniel Webster made this observation, and he said, "Good intentions will always be pleaded for every assumption of authority. It is hardly too strong to say that the Constitution was made to guard the people against the dangers of good intentions. There are men in all ages who mean to govern well, but they mean to govern. They promise to be good masters, but they mean to be your master." Now, that's a pretty wise old saying. It's worth repeating. Remember that the men running our government today are men of good intentions. I don't doubt that. Barack Obama, Tim Gaither, and all of the bankers on Wall Street, I'm sure they have good intentions, and they tell us that they do, and they're just working their hearts out every day. But Daniel Webster made this observation. It's worth repeating. He said, "Good intentions will always be pleaded for every assumption of authority," and the assumption of the authorities and the spending powers that are being assumed today are made in your best interest, and they're made by men of good intentions. And it's hardly too strong to say that the Constitution was made to guard the people against the dangers of these good intentions. And there are men in all ages who mean to govern, and they mean to govern well, but they do mean to govern. And they promise to be good masters, but they do mean to be your masters. Tuck it away in your heart. Now, that brings us now to a most important question. Who is to be the master? Are we to understand that the Constitution is up for grabs? Does that mean that its meanings as to or is to vacillate with each new appointment on the branch of the high court, or do we return to the original intent of the law? Obviously, this must be the only honest answer that can be given. For those who would seek to pervert the law, they must one day acknowledge the fact that there is an even higher judge, a higher law to which every knee must bend and to whom every man must bow. At that time and in that place, it will not be what the judges say, but it will be what God's law says that will determine the final decision. God, our Creator, being just in every action, will bind himself to his own infallible, unchanging law, because without that recognition of an absolute final authority, there can be no justice in heaven or on earth. And removal of his absolute laws reduces one to a tyranny that erupts from the very bowels of hell. Our present-day justices would be wise to follow the example of the great judge of eternity. So said the editor. His name is James R. Patrick. All right, that's the conclusion to the book. Foundations of Liberty is the title to it. It's a little booklet. How many pages is it? 57, about 60 pages. 60-page book, a booklet on the Supreme Court. I thought it was well done, and it points up a very important and poignant problem. We'll give you their name and address here. It's the East Moline Christian School. It's been updated. It's now called the MacArthur Institute. MacArthur Institute. And their address is 946th Avenue in East Moline, Illinois. And their zip code is 61244. 946th Avenue, East Moline, Moline, Illinois, 61244. And the title of the publication is called Foundations of Liberty. And the article that you're looking for here is called The Supreme Court. The Supreme Court. Now, the editor pointed out something about law. Something about law from the perspective of God. And in my Mosaic Law School, we have two chapters, chapter 64 and 65, that deal with judges and rulers and judgment. The creator of the universe is the creator of limited government and the free market economic system. Thou shalt not steal is the foundation of the free marketplace. Like it or lump it, that's the way it is. And there are laws, rules, and regulations that come down, and the Ten Commandments are treated in the same way that our Constitution is treated. That if we want to practice it, we will, and if we don't, we won't, and that there aren't any consequences to that. Our perversion of our Constitution has consequences, and we're going to experience those consequences in the loss of our liberties. And the failure to observe the Ten Commandments has the same outcome. It is the failure of government is the results of it and the loss of your liberties. And that's because the Ten Commandments are called the perfect law of liberty. In the scripture, God himself said that the perfect law of liberty, whatever liberty is now, the perfect law of liberty is the Ten Commandments. Now, the Ten Commandment model is the model that our founding fathers adopted to create our constitutional republic. Sometimes people will say, I think that the Constitution had divine inspiration. They're correct. It did. It does. It has, and it will. Divine inspiration. Principles of law, 22 principles of law, have been incorporated into our federal constitution from the Ten Commandments. And it is the agent of morality. The agent of morality. And morality is the following or the practice of the Ten Commandments and the laws of God. And a moral people practice the Ten Commandments. And the reason that we're no longer moral is that we no longer practice the Ten Commandments. An illustration of that. In our public schools, we teach an alternative lifestyle. An alternative lifestyle means sodomy. We teach sodomy in our public schools as an alternative lifestyle. Now, that's not moral. It may be fun. I don't know. It may be exciting and thrilling and rewarding and fulfilling. And I mean, there's got to be a thousand good reasons why sodomy is practiced. But it's wrong, and it's wrong because the creator of the universe determined that it was, said it was, and legislated against it. Like it or lump it. It's the way it is. It isn't true because I say it, and it isn't false if I kept my mouth shut. If I'd have never been born, it wouldn't have changed anything. I'm just a reporter reporting a fact. Now, teaching that perversion in our public schools degenerates into immorality. And that immorality translates into judges and business leaders and so on down the line. And they view our Constitution, they view law, they view life, they view you in the context of their own morality. And that morality then has a consequence. There's a result that comes from it. Now, if you want to know where AIDS, herpes, and VD come from, they come from the violation of thou shalt not commit adultery. You can't get a sexually transmitted disease if you practice thou shalt not commit adultery. You have to violate that law to get an STD, sexually transmitted disease. In order to get a depression, a recession, an economic collapse, you have to violate the economic laws of the Bible, the economic laws of the Creator. You have to violate thou shalt not steal. You can't get that result any other way. So this Great Depression that's coming down upon us is caused by immorality. It's caused by a failure. It's caused by a reluctance or a refusal to practice those economic laws. And most people don't even know what they are. You know, when people come into class and we start talking about economic law here in business school, for instance, they haven't got a clue. They're using paper money. They think that's good. Or put another way, what's wrong with it? Well, it's not a just weight and balance. It violates thou shalt not steal. It violates the statute that says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And there's a consequence that comes from it. And it's a loss of your liberty. It's a loss of your money. It's a loss of your livelihood. There are consequences that come from these violations. Now, the instruction that we got from God concerning judges starts in Exodus 22, verse 28. It says, "You shall not revile the judges nor curse the ruler of your people." The judge then sits in an office, and he has a duty given by the Creator himself. And in Deuteronomy 1, verses 15 through 18, we get some instruction. It says, "So I took the chief of your tribes, wise men and known, and I made them heads over you, captains over thousands, captains over hundreds, and captains over fifties, and captains over tens, and officers among your tribes. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the cause between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. You shall not respect persons in judgment, but you shall hear the small as well as the great. And you shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's. And the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. And I commanded you at that time all the things which you should do." Now, this appellate system that we use in the United States, Australia, Canada, you have an appellate process. You have a Supreme Court. This practice comes right from Deuteronomy chapter 1. Moses was the agent of the Creator of the universe and created in Anglo-Saxon administration, and for many of you people in India, for instance, or Pakistan, where the British brought the British common law, or the English or Anglo-Saxon common law. You people practice that to this day. Where'd you learn that? You learned it from the Ten Commandment model. You learned it from the laws of the Creator of the universe. You may be Hindus, you may be Muslims, but you're practicing Anglo-Saxon administration. And as a result of that, you're practicing the Ten Commandments. Like it or not, that's the way it is. Or the principles that came from the Ten Commandments, which are incorporated into our federal constitution. For instance, in Deuteronomy 19, verse 15, there's a statute that says, at the mouth of two witnesses, or at the mouth of three witnesses, shall the matter be established. In Anglo-Saxon administration, we use two witnesses or three witnesses. Two or three witnesses. Now, we also have adopted another pernicious program here. We have one notary public to notarize an official document rather than an asseveration, which requires two or three witnesses. Both means accomplish the same end. Both are recognized in Anglo-Saxon administration. One comes from God, the other comes from communism. And I don't deny that there's communism that has infiltrated into our Anglo-Saxon administration, but my point is, we used to practice the Ten Commandment model, and when we did, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nations in the world. And that's why Anglo-Saxon influence around the world is so predominant today. It's being destroyed in front of our eyeballs. And we will, all of us in Anglo-Saxon nations, be destroyed as a result of it. It's the way nations, city-states, and empires go. We become immoral. We turn our backs on these principles of law that provide the wealth, the prosperity, and the power that we enjoy. And when we destroy it, it's gone. And get ready for it, because we've destroyed it. But we didn't need to, and you don't have to either. And that's because in Anglo-Saxon administration, there is a contract between the Creator of the universe and each and every member of society. A contract called the Old Covenant. And when you practice these laws, you get their benefits. It isn't necessary for all the people in your county or all the people in your state or all the people in your nation to practice this law. It's just important that you do. You're the only one that counts. And that's because in judicial administration, the courts are there to protect the rights of individuals, not groups. Just individuals. And the law of God, the Ten Commandments, is there to protect you and your rights, just you, personally. Not groups and organizations. That's the way that game is played. That's the way that works. Now, in Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 through 20, we were instructed that judges and officers shall you make you in all of your gates, which the Eternal your God gives you, throughout your tribes. And they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not wrest judgment. You shall not respect persons, and neither take a gift, for a gift does blind the eyes of the wise, and it perverts the words of the righteous. That which is altogether just shall you follow, that you may live and inherit the land which the Eternal your God gives you. Here in America, we have a bribery system. We call them campaign contributions. These campaign contributions are legal. That's what we have hung upon this practice. It's a pernicious practice. Campaign contributions, that's where you give money to the legislators. And these legislators take that money, put it in their campaign contributions over here, and then when they quit running for office, whatever's left over, they put in their own pockets and walk out with it. Campaign contributions, that's taking a gift. That's bribery. And so if you want to know why the laws of the United States are becoming more and more oriented toward fascism, toward big government, toward big, too big to fail corporations like General Motors and J.P. Morgan Chase and so on, it's because of these campaign contributions. It's because of the rampant bribery, immorality. In Deuteronomy 17, verses 8 through 13, if there arise a matter too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, and between stroke and stroke, being matters of controversy within your gates, Then you shall arise and get you up unto the place which the Eternal your God shall choose, and you shall come in unto the priests and the Levites and into the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show you the sentence of judgment. And you shall do according to the sentence which they of that place which the Eternal shall choose shall show you. And you shall observe to do according to all that they inform you, according to the sentence of the law which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment which they shall tell you, thou shalt do. You shall not decline from the sentence which they shall show you, to the right hand or to the left. And the man that will do presumptuously, and will not hearken unto the priest that stands to minister there before the Eternal, or unto the judge, even that man shall die. And you shall put away evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, and do no more presumptuously. So we're instructed to follow the instructions of our judges. What happens when our judges instruct us falsely? What if your judge tells you to send your kid to public school and teach him an alternative lifestyle like sodomy? Would you do that? Would you follow an unjust judge? Well, in Acts 5, verse 29, it tells us the answer. We ought to obey God rather than men. So when there is a controversy between the judge, the ruler, the guy that tells you that you have to practice the census in opposition to the plain command by God that Israel shall not be numbered, you should decline from that. We ought to obey God rather than men. And sometimes it will require that you go into the fiery furnace or the lion's den, commonly known as prison or jail. But we ought to obey God in the final analysis, and we haven't done that. And as a result of that, not that our Supreme Court was illegal or unlawful, not that our judicial system is illegal or unlawful, but because we have allowed it to become immoral, we no longer follow the Ten Commandment model. We've replaced the Ten Commandment model with this Ten Plank to the Communist Manifesto model. And now we have our judges telling us that we need Social Security and paper money, that we need to practice public school, income tax, central banking, insurance. These are criminal activities. And the people now are following the judges, the politicians, and the rulers. In short, in ancient times, it was they're following the princes of Israel. The princes, you know, the politicians, the Dianne Feinsteins and Barbara Boxers and Ted Kennedy, following the princes. Now, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements and recommendations that we're giving don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are talking about the Supreme Court. It's the title of the article from Foundations of Liberty. The Supreme Court, remember the Foundation of Liberty article, the basis of the program here, is located at 900 46th Avenue, East Moline, Illinois, 61244. They got a phone there. It's 309-796-1485. Again, that's 309-796-1485. Also known as the East Moline Christian School. So if you're living up in the Chicago area, you might want to consider sending your child to parochial school if you're of a mind to send them to a constitutional, patriotic, God-oriented, scripturally defined church, group, or organization. You might want to consider that. I'm not here to recommend it, espouse it. I'm not here to tell you how good it is. I don't know them personally. But after having read the article here on the Supreme Court and read the article, and I did a review of the free enterprise system, I find that their views and that their positions are compatible with the Scripture, and I find that they're compatible with our Constitution. In Deuteronomy 19, verses 16 through 21, he says, "If a false witness rises up against any man to testify against him, that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Eternal, before God, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days, and the judges shall make diligent inquisition." That's called cross-examination. "And behold, if the witness be a false witness, and if he has testified falsely against his brother, then shall you do unto him as he had thought to have done unto his brother, so that you shall put away evil from among you. And those which remain shall hear in fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. And your eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, and stripe for stripe." So here's that judgment again from the Creator himself. And these judgments from God, boy, they are not kind and they're not gentle. They're tough. It's what we call tough love. And after all, that's what the love of God is. "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous." And he's telling us here, "Those that remain will hear in fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you." That's what happens with a false witness. We call that perjury today. Perjury. It's punishable by whatever it was that the perjurer intended to do to the other guy. Whatever that was that he intended to do. That's what you do to him. That's his punishment. In the case of Mark Furman, he intended to put O.J. Simpson in prison for the rest of his life. The perjured witness, in this case, this Mark Furman that came in and lied, instead of a few hundred hours of community service, he should have been put in prison for the rest of his life. That's what he thought to do to O.J. Simpson with his false testimony, and that's what God requires here. It's not kind, not gentle, but the rest of us should hear and fear from it. If we practiced that, we would have morality in our courts. If we had morality in our courts, our Constitution would work. And again, the reason that our Constitution isn't working is because our Constitution is designed for a moral people. And what we have is an immoral mob, and this immoral mob has to be controlled. And in order to control it, you have to have more and more policemen with more and more rules and regulations. And that's because the mob cannot govern itself. And because the mob can't govern itself, then we have to have governors. And these are called policemen, public officials. And so we degenerate into this monolithic, huge government that's going to do for us what we're unable to do for ourselves. People should be able to provide for themselves. And if we followed the economic laws, you would be able to do that. If you're having economic problems, it's because you don't follow the 16 economic laws of the Bible. And if you did, you'd have plenty of money. And if you don't, you'll be poor. If you're poor, it's because you don't practice these 16 economic laws of Scripture. If you're in bad health, it's because you don't practice those 19 laws or 19 health laws of the Scripture. If you're agriculture, if you're a farmer, and your crops are being eaten up by pests, or you're not getting the yield that you need, it's because you're not practicing the 15 agricultural laws. It's just that simple. It's no big mystery. There are laws that govern the universe, laws that govern agriculture, laws that govern human relations. If you're having problems, you're not practicing those laws. It's just that simple. Now, when we talk about judgment, notice here that we have judges and priests. Did you notice that your judges wear robes? They should be wearing white linen ephods. They wear black robes. I don't know if that's symbolic of Satan, the black robe. I suspect that it is. But they wear robes, and that's because judges are priests. That's what a judge is. He's a priest. And under the Mosaic law, we got our law, Anglo-Saxon administration, comes from Moses at Mount Sinai. Notice these judges and priests are interchangeable. And as a result of that, they represent God. Now, our Congress, our legislature here, is illegal right from the get-go. We have an instruction in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and 12, verse 32, not to add to this law, not to take away from it. We should not be creating laws in our Congress. Dianne Feinstein should not be creating gun regulation laws. We have all the law that the Creator of the universe intended for us to follow in the Ten Commandments and the 749 statutes that follow them. So we decided, well, the law of God is incomplete, and what we need is a Congress to make our laws for us. And so they do. And they've made 25,000 gun laws. The Ten Commandments do not limit your mode or means of defense, but they impose upon you a strict code of morality called the Ten Commandments. And if we were to teach the Ten Commandments in relationship to guns and the Second Amendment, we wouldn't need 25,000 gun regulations. 25,000 gun regulations are there to regulate an immoral mob of people who cannot govern themselves. When I was a kid, I had a gun. I carried it on my paper route and shot pigeons off the power lines in Eureka, California. I was never molested by the police. Can you imagine a 12-year-old kid today carrying a .22 on the handlebars of his bicycle in downtown Kansas City, or Detroit, or Los Angeles, shooting pigeons off the power line? Huh? Why, I would imagine today to discharge a firearm in the city limits would be against the law. For a kid 12 years old to have a gun would probably get the parents locked up, and so on. When I was a kid, we had morality. We were still teaching the Ten Commandments. I don't know of a single 12-year-old kid, when I was a 12-year-old kid, didn't have a .22. All of my friends did. And we all used them regularly, by ourselves. 12, 13, 15-year-old kids out here with their guns. No one ever got shot. No one ever was threatened. When we went to high school, we carried our guns in the rack on our pickups, drove into the schoolyards with guns in our pickups, parked in the parking lot, 16, 18-year-old kids. Never had a problem. Why, today, if you had a kid within, they got laws and rules now. Hell, if you have a gun within 1,000 feet of a school, for crying out loud, you got a law that you're in violation of. Why is that? The nation's immoral. It's just that simple. 50 or 60 years ago, you had a moral people that could govern themselves. They had self-restraint. 16-year-old kids knew that killing people was a violation of the law of God. Thou shalt not kill. They don't teach that in public school today. Hell, you can't have a Bible in public school, for crying out loud. And there's a result that comes from it. And the result is the loss of your liberty. The result is manifest in all of these gun legislation laws. Maybe you need them. You know, John Adams made the observation. He said, our Constitution is made for a moral people. And it's not made for immoral people. Immoral people can't function under this Constitution. It requires self-government. You got to be able to control yourself. Today, the lawyers, the businessmen of America, they can't control themselves. Look at Enron. And how the management of the company drove the company into bankruptcy, but in the process they were robbing the stockholders, robbing the people of California with their practices. They had no moral restraints. They didn't understand, thou shalt not steal. They didn't understand. Here are men with degrees after their names, been to Harvard Business School and so on, didn't understand the fundamentals of do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Didn't understand that. Didn't practice it. Drove the company into bankruptcy. And that's just the beginning of the problem, was Enron and Global Crossing and these corporations that went upside down the first time around, back in 2000, 2001, 2002. And then ultimately, it has now come to the Great Depression of the 21st century. A total collapse of the world's economy. Caused by immorality. Now, am I trying to get on the bandwagon and get you to give your heart to Jesus and go to church? Hell, you are doing that. If you're in America, 65% of Americans go to church every Sunday. For what purpose? They didn't learn anything when they got there. Average Joe Sixpack is using paper money, paying an income tax, has insurance, and sends his kids to public school. That's 40% of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Does it every day. And thinks that he's doing God a service by following that way of life. He's a 40% communist coming out of the chute. And if we took a look at the other six, he's practicing those six also. Americans are 100% communists. This Cold War battle between capitalism and communism was won hands down by the communists. The communists are in control in every country worldwide. And the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, the central banks, the income tax, the public school, the Social Security, it's in place in every country around the world. And they're the diametric opposite to the 10 commandment model. Now, I'm not out on a crusade. I'm not trying to get you to practice the 10 commandments. I don't care whether you do or not. It's no skin off my back one way or the other. I don't need to persuade you to follow me. I need to be able to lead myself. That's all I'm concerned about. I'm just concerned about getting off the ship myself. If you get off, that's good. But I'm not concerned about you getting off. I'm just concerned about me getting off. Now, our Creator gave us a guide, gave us a model to follow. It's called the Ten Commandment model. He starts off in Exodus 23, verse 2. He says, you shall not follow a multitude to do evil, and neither shall you speak in a cause to decline after many, to wrest judgment. Exodus 23, verse 6. You shall not wrest the judgment of the poor in his cause. Leviticus 19, 15. You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. Now, you know, today, politicians come around and they say, why, well, look at these poor folk over here. Why, we, we have to do something for these poor people over here at taxpayer expense. No, you don't. No, you don't. It says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor. You shall not give the poor man preeminence over the rest of the society. Politician, listen up. No, it resonates well, and it gets votes, and people feel sorry for people that are poor. Boys and girls, people that are poor are suffering the penalty for the violation of the 16 economic laws. Nothing more, nothing less. Donald Trump isn't violating all of those 16 economic laws. He may be doing something worse. He may be violating some other law and taking advantage that he ought not to be. I'm not here to judge one way or the other, but I'm here to tell you that I'll bet you Donald Trump's practicing more of those 16 economic laws than Joe Sixpack out here smoking Marlboros and drinking beer down here at the tavern. Now, that's the way that game is played. Now, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure. And so here we are in the United States, and it's the same where you're living. I don't care where it is. You're using paper money from your central bank. That's an unjust weight. It's an unjust measure. You're practicing mortgages and deeds of trust. You're buying and selling land in violation of Leviticus 25, verse 23. And so on down the line. These violations of law, these violations are the violations of judgments. The creator of the universe has set up an economic system. And if you follow it, it works. And if you don't, okay, you gets what you gets. Now in Numbers chapter 27, talking about judgment and the appellate process, here comes the Supreme Court of the United States. On the Day of Atonement, once every year, all those causes that were brought before the judges in the lower tribunals in the tribes, if they couldn't arrive at a conclusion, they would take it on up to the high priest on the Day of Atonement, who would take it into the Holy of Holies, to God sitting on the mercy seat, who would give out a judgment. Now, here's a judgment that came from God Almighty himself, live and direct from the Creator of the universe, over an issue that hadn't been laid out in statute. It's in Numbers chapter 27, verses 1 through 11, and in Numbers 35, verses 1 through 34. It starts off by saying here in Numbers 27, 1 through 11, it says, Then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Micar, and so on down the line. And they stood before Moses and before Eleazar, the priest, and before the princes and all the congregation by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, saying, Our father died in the wilderness, and he was not in the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah. But he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. Why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family because he has no son? Give unto us, therefore, a possession among the brethren of our father. This is a construction of the inheritance statute. We need a determination. And the question is, can a female inherit in Israel? In Anglo-Saxon administration, the answer is yes, a female can inherit. That's not true in most societies around the world. Where did we get the idea that females could inherit? We got it from Numbers 27, verses 1 through 11. And Moses brought their cause before the Eternal, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, The daughters of Zelophehad speak right. You shall surely give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. And you shall speak unto the children of Israel, saying, If a man dies and has no son, then he shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. And if he has no daughter, then he shall give his inheritance unto his brethren. And if he has no brethren, then he shall give his inheritance unto his father's brethren. And if his father have no brethren, then he shall give his inheritance unto his kinsman, that is next to him in his family, and he shall possess it, and it shall be unto the children of Israel a statute of judgment, as the Eternal commanded Moses. Under no circumstance does it go to the church. Under no circumstance does it go to the state. And there is a succession here of who it is that inherits. Now, here in the United States, we've got our own system of inheritance, along with an inheritance tax, so that the state can get its cut. These are criminal statutes in violation of the law of God. We love them. We prefer the laws of the state that come out of our Congress and out of our legislatures to the Ten Commandment model. We practice all of the laws of our government. We refuse to practice the laws of our God. And, of course, there's a result that comes from that. Now, our founding fathers did not do that. Our founding fathers picked up on the Ten Commandment model. They might not have followed all of it, but they followed much of it. And they enshrined it into our Constitution. And the people of America practiced the Ten Commandment model until 1933. Yeah, you know, pretty good. Pretty well. But in 1933, with the onset of the Great Depression, which was brought on by our fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto and our second plank, a heavy progressive income tax and a central bank, we started that in 1913. It developed into a Great Depression, a great economic collapse in 1929, lasted 11 years, and the people followed their princes. The people followed the Democratic Party, and they said, government, give us. Government, take care of us. We need this big, all-pervasive government. Well, there's the problem, cause, and solution right there in one fell swoop. And you can learn it all from the last Great Depression. Now, here we are on the threshold of the new depression of the 21st century, following the same failed policies of the last one. And it will produce the same failed results that we got the last time. Now, there's an option here. If you, as an individual, say to yourself, I don't want to go through that god-awful mess of the 1930s, well, then why don't you get off the Communist Manifesto and get on to the Ten Commandment model and see what you can do to solve the problem for yourself. And that's because the judiciary program that you see here in the judgments and the judges given to us by God are aimed at that individual again. Our judicial system is not aimed at protecting the Catholic Church or protecting the ACLU or the Black People of America or any other group or organization. It is aimed at protecting individuals. That's the purpose behind it. And the Ten Commandment model is that model that protects individuals, not groups. And not the poor. You shall not wrest the judgment of the poor in his cause. Don't vote for Donald Trump because he's got a lot of money. But don't honor the person of the mighty or the poor. You treat everybody under the law exactly the same. That's what justice is all about. Remember Foundations of Liberty? It's the Supreme Court. Telephone number up there again. Give it to you right quickly here. It's 309-796-1485. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.